Hello and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Football and Grits. I am your host, David Ubben. And if it's Wednesday, that means I'm going to be here. And so is our South Carolina writer, Josh Kendall. Josh has covered the SEC for a long time. We are joined by a special guest today for good reason. We'll get into that in a little bit. But again, this is the second week of this show. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing. Leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. It helps get the word out. Helps the show. We've got a full week of content again coming with our SEC team. And of course, you can always subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/grits to access all of that and listen to the show commercial free. So Josh, thanks for coming. It was good to see you Saturday night. What have you made of the early week in the SEC?
Well, I mean, I think we came into the season thinking the SEC East was Florida and Georgia, or at least I did. Nothing has changed my mind, even though they had sort of divergent first weekends. The Gators' offense looked great. I'm interested to see how well they follow it up. Georgia clearly has got some work to do, which frankly makes the division more interesting to me.
Well, we need to talk about Florida. And so we brought in somebody who really knows Florida, G. Allen Taylor. Covers the Gators for us at The Athletic, following up the stellar Will Salmon. Alan, what did you make of Saturday's game, and how did that Florida offensive performance stack up to what you were kind of expecting?
Well, you know, the big thing this spring and summer was, how will Kyle Trask look without those senior receivers who are all in the NFL now? And I guess, you know, 51 points and 640 some odd yards, I guess he's okay. You know, I think they have handled the personnel development side of things. And obviously it helps when you got Kyle Pitts back, who's essentially a wide receiver playing tight end. But, you know, Trask, you know, who knows, man? Fate's funny, right? If Felipe Franks doesn't have that horrible injury last year, maybe we never get to see, you know, what this guy has. But 30 of 42, a lot of that going to Pitts, the tight end, but 11 guys made catches, including some freshmen. So, you know, I think the passing game's a good hand. And, of course, Florida couldn't really run the ball like it wanted to last year. But with, you know, 4 fifth-year seniors on that offensive line, they had a pretty good running game against Ole Miss as well. And it's just a matter of finding out if Ole Miss is that soft or if Florida, you know, is that good offensively.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the million-dollar question here is, through week one, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what is reality, what is an overreaction, what are we overlooking. From where you saw and sort of just trying to read what Florida did, putting up those numbers, putting up those points, how much of that do you think was Florida just being, hey, we're this good? Kyle Pitts, I think, obviously, I agree with you. I think he's playing in an All-American, you know, John Mackey-type level play right now. The offense as a whole, how much of that is Florida just being that good, or how much of that is Ole Miss, you know, didn't have a great offensive season last year and struggled in week one under Lane Kiffin, who, of course, not known for his defense as well. Where do you draw that line?
Well, I think, you know, Ole Miss clearly has a pretty good offense, and their recruiting just hasn't been up to par on the defensive side of late. So we expect Florida to take advantage of that. But when you're sort of trying to evaluate whether it was Gators being great or Rebels being bad, you know, you didn't see a lot of guys just running wide open like coverage busts. You know, you didn't see a lot of Kyle Trask essentially throwing against air to guys who are uncovered. You saw Pitts making catches against double teams twice for touchdowns. You saw back shoulder throws to Trevon Grimes. So Ole Miss wasn't out of position. They were just outmanned. And that makes me think that, you know, it definitely was Florida being efficient for most of the day, as opposed to just being gifted touchdowns. You know, as I wrote today, this offense still has a lot of upside, right? Because they didn't score 3 times in the red zone. Luckily, they've got an All-American caliber kicker as well, even though somehow he got voted third team preseason All-SEC. So they've got all the weapons there. And I think as you get deeper into better defenses, I think they're going to be very good at situational football, whether that's red zone, whether that's third and fourth down type situations. I think they're built to score a ton of points this year, and they might have to, the way that defense played on the Florida side Saturday.
Trask strikes me as a guy who you watch on film and you say, all right, we feel like we got this under control. And then he beats you and you leave and you shake your head and say, how in the world did that happen? That'll never happen again. And then he beats you again. I mean, he's just – I don't know that he makes it look easy, but he doesn't look like he does anything spectacular out there. And then you turn around and they've got a ton of points.
I'm with you on that. I think you watch Trask and he doesn't jump out to you and say – oh, you know, this is definitely a guy that's going to light the world on fire. But, you know, I'm not going to say he's the next Joe Burrow, but I think I saw a lot of the same things out of Joe Burrow in 2018, where, you know, you just didn't really see a lot of wow moments. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe there were a little bit of those on Saturday. So the natural question there, Alan, is what is the ceiling for this offense? I mean, are we going to talk about a group that can put up 40 a game? Is that a realistic goal for this Florida offense?
I think it is, and really I think it has to be. I mean, historical norms might go out the window this year based on how this season unfolds, but, you know, we looked at all the college football playoff teams and what they average scoring, and it's I think the median was something like 42. And so even though Florida felt like they had a good offense last year when they averaged around 33 – you know, I just pointed out, I'm like, well, that's 8 or 9 short of what the normal CFP team averages. And so they go out and get 51 in week one. And, you know, a lot of it is Trask. They don't ask him to make Pat Mahomes-type throws. They don't even ask him to make a lot of opposite hash throws. But he's made them a few times, and he gets the ball there, and he gets it there with pretty good pace. You know, I made the sort of premature comparison earlier this spring to him and maybe Danny Werfel, right? I mean, Werfel wasn't a pro prospect, really. He didn't have a big arm, but timing was there, recognition of where the defensive voids were, and Trask has that in spades, man. I tell you, he
Be careful. Steve Spurrier is going to get on you. He's going to catch you. He's going to find out where you lived under.
Well, exactly. Maybe he'll bring me a bottle of Sutter Home like he took to Dan Mullen yesterday. But just pointing out a guy who doesn't wow you physically, but if you make right decisions, and, you know, I think I've seen this a lot in the Big 12 the last few years, guys who, like Texas Tech quarterbacks, who were never going to get a look at the NFL. This is pre-Mahomes, by the way. But guys who just get the ball out, make a good decision, and suddenly you're looking at a team putting up 45 or 50 every week. And I think Trask understands that offense well enough to do that. And once people start taking away Kyle Pitts, well, that's when Grimes and Copeland and Kadarius Toney are going to have their big games.
You know, I think we've mentioned this on this podcast last week and a little bit this week, that you're going to have to score points to win the SEC East, to win consistently in the SEC, and then, of course, to win the SEC title. Florida did that. Georgia did not do that. I'll tee it up for you guys first. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your alarm level of the Georgia offense?
I'm at a 6. I think you can't – if you don't have the quarterback situation figured out, you're not going to be any good. That doesn't mean you've got to have a great quarterback. Stetson Bennett could very well be the answer there, maybe. I'm not sure I'm sold on that yet. But they've liked him in that program for a while. And if your offensive line can block with the type of backs they generally have, although Zamir White wasn't great this weekend, a guy who, like Trask, we're talking about, just gets the ball in the right place, gets the run protection set up on the right play, that guy could be fine. They've got JT Daniels back in the mix now, so you would think that the five-star eventually wins that job, whether it's this week or next week. But, you know, they were just completely out of sorts. They could be fine against Auburn. I would still pick them to beat Auburn. But if they scuffle around on offense again, I think it opens the door for Florida first and foremost, but for everybody else. It makes the division more interesting.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Arkansas just didn't have the horses to make Georgia pay for that slow start. But Auburn certainly does. Where are you at on the dogs right now, Alan, on a scale of 1 to 10 on your alarm bells on that offense?
probably about a four, but I feel like Georgia is one of the few SEC teams right now that is sort of vintage SEC, right? If they win the East this year, it's going to be because of that defense is salty and the offense does enough to get by. So, you know, I like those kind of stories, right? I'm sort of over this thing where, you know, guys score three or four touchdowns a game and you got to score 45 to win. So I think Georgia's going to keep it old school this year and, you know, try to let that defense bring the way, because the offensive line was good enough, I guess, in the second half against Arkansas. But there's going to be some defensive fronts that give that group problems. And whether it's Daniels, Mathis, or Stetson, you know, playing quarterback, you know, I just don't see them being able to hang with teams that get 25 or 30. And I'm not sure their defense is ever going to let that happen.
I'm not sure you can win that way anymore. I would be interested to see Georgia, to see if Georgia could do it that way, because I'm just not convinced, no matter who you are. I mean, we saw Nick Saban give in and just decide, okay, fine, I'll score 50 a game if that's what y'all want. But I'm really not. I'm just not sure, given the fact that in the cycle now, offenses are, you know, are out in front. I'd be interested to see if you could win it the old school way anymore.
Yeah, I'd like to see Alabama put a "Is this what we want football to be?" banner up in their stadium as they're hanging 50 on everybody. But you know, the problem, you hit on it, I think, Josh, is that if you don't know what you're doing at quarterback, you can't get something consistent. It's hard to have an identity, because I think Georgia wants to score points. You know, that's what they brought in Todd Monken to do. You know, James Coley didn't work out. And they got to figure out, okay, Bama's putting up all these points. We're seeing teams kind of embrace this. If we want to beat Bama, we're going to have to score. They're going to have to still keep up that defense, but they want to obviously, you know, become a little bit similar to what Alabama was doing, and Monken can do that. But if you can't, A, control the line of scrimmage for 60 minutes against a pretty bad Arkansas team on either side of the ball, really, and B, find some consistency at quarterback, be able to make some plays, be able to consistently move the ball, control the game. Again, against Arkansas, you got some issues. And I you know, obviously, you know, this is going to be a real test for them, because, again, Auburn is going to be able to score some points. And if they mess around like that again, they're going to be 1-1. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say 6.5. I'm almost where you are, Josh, just because I think you're right. I think they'll figure out the line of scrimmage. The offensive line, you know, they're rebooting. They've lost some guys, and again, they have good backs. I think they'll be okay there. But your ceiling is really pretty low if you don't have a playmaker at quarterback. And I don't see a playmaker at quarterback. I mean, if JT Daniels, you know, if he's still waiting and he, you know, hasn't been taking contact and hasn't had a ton of live reps, if that's happening, you know, it's unfair to expect him to come in and light the world on fire. And he's still pretty inexperienced and is, of course, new to the program as well. He hasn't practiced very much at all, much less live reps. DeJuan Mathis was all over the place. Never great when you're getting benched for Stetson Bennett. And Stetson Bennett, you know, might be able to steady the ship a little bit, but he's not going to walk out there and beat Alabama single-handedly for you. You know, Alabama's going to be able to score on some folks. And so for what Georgia wants to be, you know, I think a 6-7 range makes a lot of sense to me, because I think they can figure out the things that you recruit to avoid, and that's winning the line of scrimmage. But that's in 2020 in the SEC, that is just not quite enough. You got to do more. You got to have some playmakers, and they have them everywhere except, for now, at least, the most important spot. I think they can be okay there. Okay doesn't necessarily win the SEC, and it definitely is not going to be something that beats Bama. So they got to figure out something there, or find some answer. What does that look like? I'm not sure. I'm open if you guys have any suggestions of where Georgia can go from here if they don't have you know, great play from quarterback. Is there any way around that?
And David, you know, unlike a normal year where maybe you had a couple of group of five schools or an FCS team to get some of this stuff repped, I mean, Georgia's entering a stretch where it's Auburn, Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, and Florida, right? So they'll know by week five if they're in the race or not.
I just watched the light version of this in 2019 at South Carolina. Again, this is the very mini version on far different scale. But if your quarterback position continues to struggle, everybody else eventually gets very tired of that, and it weighs everybody on offense and defense down. So that's why I say they've just got to get something situated so everybody on the sideline and the field feels like the guy taking the snap gives them a shot to win. Not doesn't have to win the game for them, but just gives them a shot.
Can I be honest for a second? You need some new college gear. That shirt you have, that one, you know, you bought freshman year, it's got holes in it. The collar is a little bit frayed. You can barely even read what school you're actually rooting for. It's not getting the job done. Its best days are behind it. But the good news is, if you check out our new sponsor, Homefield, your best days are ahead of you. The most comfortable vintage college apparel brand that you will ever find. You can dig through their archives, find a design that you like. They've got 90 schools already. They're already adding schools all the time. If they don't have your school, they're probably trying to get licensed for them right now. So show some school spirit for your favorite team or your alma mater. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use code SEC for 20% off your first purchase. College football is coming back. You better wear a shirt that makes you sure that you know that that's the case. That's Homefield Apparel and use code SEC for 20% off your first purchase today. Before we get out of here, we got to touch on another possible overreaction. The A&M hype train, mild this offseason, I would say, struggled with Vanderbilt. They were a couple plays away from getting into a really nervous situation. I picked A&M second in the West. I'm beginning to wonder about that. What is your alarm system set for the Aggies right now in 1 to 10? We'll start with Alan.
Yeah, it's pinging, man. It's time to dial 911. I'm like you. I really bought into it because I thought LSU was going to fall off. I thought Auburn was sort of good but not great. And I really played the law of averages that Jimbo Fisher is going to, you know, get this figured out at some point. But then you have the opt outs, and suddenly it feels like it's Kellen Mond versus the world there. And 17 points at home versus Vandy when Vandy's missing its top linebacker. You know, COVID or not, man, that's a nasty showing. And so there's a good reason they're 16.5-point road dogs at Bama this week. I never thought they were going to beat Bama, but I thought, you know, maybe that could be their only loss and then a close game against Florida and have a chance. But right now, man, if I could shuffle my picks, I would.
Where are you at on that, Josh?
I thought the overreaction you were talking about was me starting a Vandy podcast next week. I think the Aggies are fine. I think the Commodores are just much better than we've given them credit for. Actually, in all seriousness, I was with you. I thought Texas A&M was going to be pretty good, and now I'm not so sure. You know, 10 years, $75 million was never a good idea, but boy. You know, it
fully guaranteed.
I mean, it really doesn't look like a good idea now. You got to be some kind of. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying you got to be strong mentally to keep grinding if you've got a 10-year, $75 million deal. I mean, so let's just see how this thing goes. But yeah, I think the Aggies' concern is very high. I think the angst, given everything there, is very high. I think it is inexcusable that program hasn't competed at a higher level in whatever conference it's been more consistently, because, you know, you just go out there and you just wade through money to get wherever you're going. I mean, that they've put the money in, they've got the resources, they should be better consistently.
Yeah, and I would say those are Texas dollars, you know? Those aren't real dollars. They're Texas dollars.
But even they're even bigger.
Exactly. Although Phillips 66 is trading at like only 52 per share right now, so it's way down. Yeah, it's a mystery why they haven't been better. And I'm not sure Fisher has the answer, because do you guys get the sense that it's not just X's and O's, like the culture, people aren't bought in there? I mean, when you got guys opting out and, you know, their social justice stuff to me sounded different and more harder edged than what I saw at other places, to where it just, things just didn't feel comfortable and like everybody was on the same page there. And I might be reading into it, but given what Fisher left behind at FSU, I feel like we might be seeing the same problem surfacing out there.
Yeah, I think too. I think people in the SEC may not know quite as intimately how much the mood and fortunes of football in the state of Texas ebb and flow with the price of oil. At Texas and Texas A&M, that is everything. If they're up high, listen, fundraising is easy. They were not very high, I can tell you this year, and that is a problem. And it just makes everybody a lot grumpier. And, you know, you were talking about Georgia and Texas A&M. They kind of feel like inverses of each other because it feels like Georgia has got everything everywhere except this big question at quarterback. And then A&M, you've got Kellen Mond, who's as good, maybe the best quarterback in the SEC. We'll see. But they got some questions everywhere. The opt-outs made things a little bit more complicated. You know, they've recruited really well, but in terms of like real star power and great players, you know, they still got to find some guys. Losing Osmond was big. Losing Hines was big. I'm a 6 or 7 on the Aggies. I think there's always a pretty low level hum of doubting Texas A&M just because we haven't seen it from them. You know, obviously that the 2012 team was the best team in the SEC that we have seen from A&M and the best team at A&M in quite some time. And they haven't really scratched the surface of that yet, and they haven't really shown a lot of signs that they're going to be a team that can take to the next level and really put a challenge into Alabama. But, of course, that's why they play the games. They'll have a chance this weekend, and, you know, they're a 16-point underdog. I don't know about you guys. I had some sources tell me that a 16-point underdog won on the road in the SEC this week, apparently coached by a Pirate. So we'll see if the Aggies can follow suit.
Yeah, we all picked the wrong maroon team in the SEC West, clearly.
You know, I got to say, for the funniest possible outcome in the 2020 season, everybody was talking about Notre Dame winning the SEC. I got to say, Mike Leach crashing the SEC party and possibly winning the SEC or competing for the West with a quarterback that he has swiped from Stanford, that is a funnier outcome in 2020 football than anything that Notre Dame could do in the SEC. So we'll see. I'm not sure that we're going to see that, but I can tell you that if we do see that, I may not stop laughing for at least another year, year and a half. So I hope everyone is prepared for that on this podcast. That will do it for the Wednesday edition of Football and Grits. A lot of football. A little less grits today, but we'll get to that in time. Thank you to Josh Kendall. Again, you can read his stuff at The Athletic and follow him on Twitter at Josh The Athletic. And then, of course, G. Allen Taylor covers the Gators for us. He is in the process of moving from Morgantown to Gainesville, and it is Allen. I don't envy someone trying to move cross country in a pandemic. So Godspeed to you on that front.
Amen.
Well, thank you. It's not even the pandemic; it's football season, man. That's the big obstacle. I mean, pandemic is now secondary, right?
Yeah, it's this is a whole different ball game. For anybody who doesn't know about sort of covering college football, when the season starts, it sort of takes over a little bit of everything. There's never really any time to breathe until Thanksgiving comes, and even this year it'll be a little bit later. So, again, thank you, Josh. Thank you, Allen, for joining the show. We will see you guys again on Thursday. I will be back here with Mitch Light. And we will be chatting some more SEC football every day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. We'll see you tomorrow.